There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass. With me, Emma Sexton, plus Natalie Campbell. But this week, no Harriet Minter, as she has taken a well-deserved week off. But we were joined instead by the amazing Anna Williamson. This week, we couldn't avoid the New Year health kicks. So we had Casey Batchelor on talking about training to be a yoga teacher and how to create lasting healthy changes. None of those quick fixes. Plus, we met Laurie McAllister, who is 27 and has been sober for over 2 years. We really dug deep about booze, not drinking on a date, and how to deal with those mates who think you're just not fun if you're not drinking. We had a great conversation with Beverly Turner, the TV and radio presenter, about speech radio and why we are not hearing more women's voices.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Casey Batchelor, welcome.
Thank you.
Lovely to
Thanks
have you in,
darling.
Oh, it's good to have you here. You've been a busy girl over the last week or
I've
so.
Been busy, yeah, not stopped.
Well, I mean, for anyone that hasn't seen Casey's Instagram feed, just go and have a look at it. Because this is the most incredible transformation ever. Now, I know Casey, and I know for a fact how hard she has worked on this.
Yeah, I've worked very hard.
You really have. And I know we're going to try and, if you're cool with this, I know you will be, we want to sort of unpick a lot of the myths,
okay,
and a lot of the stardust and some of the nonsense around celebrity diets and fitness plans and that kind of thing.
Yep.
Because it's had some bad rap over
Absolutely.
The last few years.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I know that you have genuinely worked hard, okay? I know you have. But of course, so I mean, those that don't know, you have lost an incredible 4 stone in the last 8 months.
Yeah.
And you've just brought out Yoga Blitz.
I have indeed.
Which is amazing. Blitz your body with yoga in just 90 days.
Absolutely.
So this is because as well. So you have baby Flo.
I do. My little baby Flo.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's very, very good.
Thank you.
And you know what? I'm just gonna stick it out there. I mean, I think we're all very, very pro body. You know, anyone can do what they like with their body. But to your own admission, and I'm gonna borrow my fellow podcast friend Louisa Zisman this week. I don't know if you heard the podcast, but she's also a friend of Casey's, and she went, "I'm not gonna lie." She was like, "Casey ate way too much when she was pregnant."
I did, but I did. I really, really
like,
did.
I told her it was going to catch up with her. But if you look at the before pictures of before you started yoga, so once you'd had Florence.
Yeah, people thought I was still pregnant.
I mean, I think you look lovely, but you were 4 stone heavier than you are now.
Yeah, and I'm only 5'2", so it was pretty. So I went up to like 13 stone 8, but that was when I was pregnant. And then after I had Florence, you know, and lost all the water, and I was like 12 stone. And for 5'2", it was kind of pretty big. I didn't really take much notice of it because I was pregnant. Obviously, I got bigger as I was pregnant because I ate so many donuts. It was ridiculous.
Did you do the classic eating for two and
well,
think
I
you could
did
get away
because,
with it?
Because you know what it is? We're always on a diet. We're constantly on a diet. So when I was pregnant, I used it as a perfect opportunity to eat and not feel guilty. And I ate and I ate and I enjoyed every single moment of it.
Good on you.
But after I had the baby, I didn't realise how big I was because I was so used to looking big because I was pregnant. I didn't really, you know, I didn't realise. And then it was coming to a point I was like, okay, I'm not getting any smaller. This is actually fat. This is not pregnancy. I had actually put on a lot of weight. I was out of breath a lot, and I've always been quite healthy and quite fit, you know, into fitness. I went stage school, so, you know, I was always like active, but I just going upstairs to put Flo to a cot, I was out of breath. And just before I had Florence, well, actually about 6 months to a year before, I qualified as a yoga teacher. So I'd done all my yoga training.
Oh, before you had Florence?
Yeah, before I had Florence.
Right, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, so I'd done yoga for many years. And about 2 years before Florence was out, I really got into it quite heavily. So I decided to deepen my practice, and I did 200 hours vinyasa. So I qualified as a yoga teacher because I wanted to do something with it. But then obviously then I fell pregnant, so I couldn't do anything with it. So then after I had Florence, I was like, okay, now I'm going to use this to my advantage because I'm a qualified yoga teacher. So I started doing gentle yoga at home, realizing that wasn't really getting the weight off. So then I just kind of incorporated it into, you know, with some like high intensity exercises, and I was losing weight. And I'd always posted yoga on my page anyway previously. Mm-hmm. And I was posting these videos up, and everyone was like, oh my God, I really like this. Can you post some more? Can you post some more? So I posted more and more, and everyone was asking me to do a YouTube channel, or can you set up a page, or can you do this? I thought, do you know what? Everyone's asking for it, so why not? Mm-hmm. So then I just created this whole yoga blitz program of yoga and high intensity, incorporated it together, and voila, here we are,
and there you are, looking
4 stone lighter.
but you look healthier.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's nutrition as well, you know. Mm-hmm. Exercise and nutrition definitely comes as a pair.
Because I've heard that basically abs are made in the kitchen, and yeah, it's something like 70% diet, 30% exercise.
Yeah, I mean, incorporate the two is the best thing for you, but diet is obviously a massive thing with losing weight as well as exercise. But when you combine the two together, you get the results, you know. Obviously as well, cut out the alcohol, no good for you. Not gonna lie.
Do you know what? That's quite hard though. With, I mean, I don't know if you did, you drink much before?
I mean, yeah, I loved an event.
Yeah.
You get free drinks. I'm not going to lie.
But, you know, I mean, once you've had a baby, I mean, this...
But now I'm like, hell no. Mean. Especially she's teething at the moment, so I'm up all night.
Yeah, you just can't have that headache. But a lot of people, and I was one of those after I had Enzo, I really looked forward to that glass of wine at 6 o'clock. It was kind of like signaled the end of my...
I know, but then do you not think the, like, 4 or 5 o'clock wake-ups with that thick head? You're like, awful. Was that glass of wine worth it?
Awful.
No.
But you get into that sluggish sort of pattern, and I guess as well for you being a new mum, because Flo is only 8 months now. I'm imagining that takes a heck of a lot of discipline to try and fit in this exercise and the nutrition into your day-to-day, and not just do what I would say, I'm generalising here, but a lot of new mums, I'm one of them, that do, you know, grab the Bickies,
yeah,
grab the tea, because it's all you sort of have time for.
Yeah, it did, but it was, but I think where I was seeing the results, that motivated me. And where I was putting my weight loss journey, I was really open with it. I showed, you know, what my body looked like, and I displayed the journey on Instagram with my posts. And I think that gave me motivation as well, because people's like, oh wow, you're like really helping me. So that kind of spurred me on to, you know, stay on track really. But the routines, they're five short minute routines that obviously I, you know, put them together. But so you can do them at home. They're easy enough to do at home for mums, and not just for mums, for anyone really. So yeah, they're not like an hour's workout, you know, that you've got to do. They're just short 5 minute routines, so anyone can do them.
What's the line between thinking about becoming more healthy and losing weight and then having an obsession about having the perfect body? Because I think, you know, not everyone knows what that line is.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess there can be that line, really. But I just think being fit and healthy and feeling good within yourself, that's great. But then when you come to the obsession where I guess you're, I don't really know. I guess when you look in the mirror and think enough isn't enough and you want more and more, I guess that's when the obsession comes. I'm happy where I'm at. I'm happy where I am. I don't want to go anymore. I'm healthy. I feel fit. And don't get me wrong, now I'm here, I'm having my cheat nights. I'm having that takeaway. I'm having a biscuit. I'm having the chocolate cake, because I'm at that weight now where I'm happy. I don't have to worry about losing anymore. So I guess that's when the line comes, when you constantly... constantly keep going and going and going.
How much pressure did you get from the media? Because I know celebs get scrutinized so much, don't they? And, you know, especially we know new mums are pregnant and it's all about, oh, well, they snap back into shape.
Yeah.
Did you feel a lot of pressure from the media? Or did you feel like it was in your control and you did it in your pace?
Do you know what? Not so much pressure from the media, more from trolls.
Really?
Okay. It, well, do you know what?
What kind of things were being said?
Well, after I'd had the baby, I got called a wow still, and I should be harpooned. That was a great one. But it's mainly from the comments. But do you know what? The press were quite okay, actually, because I was actually being so upfront with it and showed my postpartum body and was on Instagram. They couldn't really say anything because I was putting it out there. It wasn't like they was catching me. I was putting it out there for everyone to see. And it was more like, you know, she's showing her journey. And then I got great support from it. I think when people hide away and then come out, here I am, when, you know, they've not shown the realness of their journey, that's when I think people get scrutinized more.
It's about that authenticity, isn't it?
And I mean, keeping it real.
I know you well enough to know how authentic it is, but I think, as you say, there's no right way or wrong way. And I think also a lot of people get scrutinized because they want to get back in shape straight after having a baby. And again, if that is their choice, then that is also fine. Some people aren't that bothered about it and they're quite happy to just not bother. But again,
But where I would challenge you, Anna, is maybe there is a wrong way, actually, especially with celeb sort of fad diets. A wrong way is if you're convincing lots of potentially younger girls by putting on weight to then go through a process of extreme dieting and losing weight in a way that's not sustainable or healthy, that is a wrong way. And I also think there's a fine line between knowing what authentic weight loss and you going on a journey that was authentic to you. You are a yoga instructor. It was something that you did anyway.
Yeah.
This isn't you saying, right, I'm going to binge myself on what else?
Gorge and deliberately put on weight.
Exactly.
To then sort of snare yourself at a deal in inverted commas.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then
tell
see
lots of
this
people that you're going, you know, that you've lost weight in a certain way, which probably you haven't, to then sell lots of DVDs. And that it's not their someone's lifestyle. It's not a choice that they've made. They've just done it ultimately for the money. That for me is the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think where I've done it over so many months and I've showed the journey and it's not just gone, here I am, people have seen the journey. So they've seen it's been done healthily, it's done in a natural way, and it's been done over a period of time.
8 months, not a sort of a 3 month or this is a 12-week transformation that you see quite often.
It's been over a period. So people have seen that, and I've showed the whole journey.
Do you feel any sort of level of responsibility sort of on the back of what Nat said there, because we have seen, you know, last year there was some celebrities that were outed for going down this whole weight loss celebrity DVD thing, the unethical routes, and exactly as you say, it's preying on people and it's not real, it's not genuine what they're doing. Did you find that that's hindered you in any way with regards to credibility for bringing this out?
I guess not, actually, because I'm qualified. It's my passion. It's not a quick fix for me. I've done yoga for many years. I'm qualified way before all of this. So no, because like I say, it's a passion for me, and it's not just something that I'm going to quickly do. This is something that's going to be ongoing. I've already done new plans. I've already filmed new exercises because it's a passion. It's not just something I've gone, oh, let's do that for some money. Yeah, it's not quick fix. It's my passion, and it's what I'm qualified in and what I'll be doing for a long time.
And your method, you're saying you're combining the vinyasa yoga, because there's lots of different types of yoga, aren't there? And immediately when you hear yoga, I don't know about you ladies, but I think of like the sort of the Zen, you know, you're just holding these postures. But vinyasa
is the bad boy.
Is it?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
But you're mixing it with HIIT. So is that your, has that been done before, or is that kind of
it's
your
just something
thing that you've
I've
made?
Just done? Yeah, I've just combined it together, because don't get me wrong, you can get easy vinyasa, you can get even with power yoga, there's so many different types of yoga, like yin yoga I absolutely love, but you're not going to lose weight with yin yoga. It's more about flexibility and holding restorative poses, and more about, you know, calming the body, really. Vinyasa, if you do a full-on vinyasa class, you're gonna get a sweat on. But this is more like, so for instance, like I'll do the beginning of a vinyasa flow, going down into downward dog, in downward dog, now we'll do jump jacks. So jump jacks. So you've got the weight on the arms, so with the shoulder, and then you're doing the jumping jacks. So you're building the heart rate up to get, you know, to build the fat burn, really. So yeah, I've just combined it together. Mm-hmm. And there's 12 weeks. They progressively get harder because obviously people that are doing it are not going to have done yoga before. So I say it's not like a full on yoga class, although I do want to add on full vinyasa flows on there as well. But obviously, I've just launched it with, you know, how I've lost my weight, basically. Mm-hmm. But I also have on there a yoga bliss side, and I've done guided meditations, and there's sound clips, and there's going to be body blogs on there for confidence. And then, so there's all different sides to it. And I'm just going to just keep adding and stuff, and, you know, hopefully help a lot of people, and not just with the weight loss side, but with like mental health side with mm-hmm. with the yoga bliss as well. So it's like got something on there for everyone, really.
This has really changed everything, it seems, for you, because sort of before you had flow, I mean, obviously you say you qualified in the yoga, which we know now, but I guess people really didn't know that. You were known for being off the telly.
Yeah.
You were known for sort of, you know, just being, which you still are, incredibly glamorous.
Oh, stop it. No. I know. Not tonight with baby stick on me.
But this seems to be, this seems to kind of be a new path that you're following.
Yeah, I kind of obviously... I don't know. I went stage school, so I've always loved that kind of thing. But no one doesn't really know that about me, I guess. Yeah, and no one knew that I was a qualified yoga teacher. So it's quite nice that people get to see that side of me that they probably didn't really know, I guess. So yeah, it's nice.
I like. We're talking tonight. I mean, I wanted to ask your opinion on the bras. Because, Natalie and I are sitting here braless.
Oh, okay. Moment.
Free.
Yeah. So, I mean, should women wear a bra? We were talking about this earlier on. Should women in the workplace wear a bra if they go out? What do you think of that? Do you have any opinions on that? From a lady that, you know, I mean, you were on Loose Swimming the other week in your bra and
yes,
your pants.
Yes.
Looking incredible.
Oh, thanks very much.
But yeah, what do you think?
Well, I mean... Well, talking about boobs, I mean, I don't know if you know, but I was a double G naturally.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I was a double D when I was 12. And then I went up to a double G. I had a breast reduction and then they grew back. And now where I've lost weight, I'm a double D now. This is the smallest I've ever been. So I'm tiny now. But I mean, for me, I have to wear a bra because otherwise they're just like swinging all over the place. I mean, for people that may have implants, they sit there quite nicely, but not for me. So, I mean, it's... Maybe not bra, like a crop top. They're much more comfortable without the wire.
Crop tops are good idea.
Oh, I do like actually. A sports crop top. Yeah.
But do you think it, I mean, I'm just interested in your opinion because, you know, you're a lady that looks good, you like to go out. Is it the whole boob thing? Why this has become such a debate? Do you think it's because boobs are just so sexualized?
Well, I think smaller boobs are much better now, aren't they? More in fashion. No one wants the big boobs anymore.
True.
They
it's
want
true.
The no boobs. Clothes fit so much better, I personally think.
Yeah. I hear you. I was going to say,
I feel great with small boobs. I celebrate small boobs.
well, you look amazing. Thank you so much for coming in
Thanks
as well.
For having
so,
me.
Casey Batchelor's Yoga Blitz 90-day challenge.
Yes.
So, it's on the app?
It's on a website app. Yeah, it will be. It's not available on the App Store yet. It's going to be any day. We're just waiting for it to pass. But the website's up. But yeah, so it should literally be tomorrow, the next day. I'll be on the App Store as well. But yeah, www.yogablitz.com.
She's there. And what's next then? Are we just going to be seeing where this goes this year? And
yeah,
we're going to have some more things coming out?
Yeah, fingers crossed. You know, fingers crossed some more TV stuff maybe. We've got some talks, so yeah.
Great.
Right. Have you? Ooh, I need to pump you for that. Off air. Casey, my love, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, ladies.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Laurie McAllister from the blog Gin and Tonic. Now, I've been following Laurie for over a year. You are 27 and you are sober.
Yeah, that's right. It's Girl and Tonic.
Girl and Tonic, yeah. Sorry.
I've
got it here, Gin and Tonic.
It's
sorry.
Just because it rolls off the tongue as well. It's
Freudian
you know,
slip, actually.
G&T, you know, Girl and Tonic.
Sorry.
It was my whole idea. I was a big gin drinker, so Girl and Tonic sort of was the replacement. Yeah, 27, 2 years sober now.
2 years sober.
Congratulations.
Okay,
what
does that actually... So I am sober right now.
No, you're not.
We went out for dinner before the show and you had a glass of wine. You were
but
not
I'm
sober. Sober.
You're sober.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so I had my last alcoholic drink on December the 10th, 2017.
Not that you're counting.
Not that I'm counting. Actually, I don't count anymore, but I did in the early days.
Okay. What was the trigger? What was the trigger for that?
For not drinking anymore. I had quite a lot of triggers. I used to drink a lot, but not in like a, like in a going out with my mates, drinking a lot of wine, mm-hmm. drinking quite a lot on a Friday night, having a bad day, having a drink. So you know the story. And I found that I'm an anxious person. I struggle quite badly with anxiety. And it got to the point where the next day, my anxiety would be through the roof. Yeah. I would be really struggling and I couldn't deal anymore with that hangover guilt. A lot of, not even guilt, but shame. A lot of not great stuff happened when I was drinking and I didn't really like the person I was when I was drinking. And so one day, well, quite a lot of days, I said I'm never drinking again. And one day it actually stuck. So 2 years on, we're here.
So you didn't actually have a drink problem per se, as in I'm alcoholic. I mean, I'm just going to say it just so I'm clear.
I wouldn't use the word alcoholic for myself, but a lot of the research now shows that there's a like a spectrum of drinking. So you might go from 1 to 10. I didn't get to like a 9 or a 10, which is what someone would typically say is an alcoholic. You know, your version of an alcoholic who's, you know, sat, I don't want to stereotype people, but sat on a park bench drinking in the morning, lost everything. No, I wasn't at that point. But was I dependent on drinking and drinking alcohol for... to self-medicate? Yeah, I was. I am not in AA. I haven't done that. I got sober on my own through choice. But I was on, I would say I was on that spectrum where a normal drinker would be a 1. I was probably a 4 or a 5. I just didn't wait to be an 8 to stop.
And we have a culture that really does hide excessive drinking. Because like you say, your drinking to me doesn't sound... like particularly excessive. It sounds like the type of drinking anyone in their 20s is used to doing.
I'm doing now in my 30s. But, I mean, promotion. Let's go and cheers. Yeah, let's toast it. I mean,
and I'm sitting here now thinking, oh gosh, because it's like I say, I get through a day, and and my son goes to bed on time and. Let's have a cheeky glass, because it's a ceremony, isn't it? I think
it's that moment.
It's that gratification. Yeah. It is that self-medicating, whatever it might be. Mm. And I think this is fascinating that you had the self-awareness actually to be able to say, I'm on a 4 or a 5. I don't want to get any higher than that. And honestly, could I say that I have done that? No, I haven't.
Was it linked to the anxiety, though? Because I think that's the bit where I can definitely agree with what you're saying around the sort of the next day guilt. Even on a couple of glasses, I just talk a lot more. And so my thing in the morning is like, God, I was just talking a lot last night, wasn't I? That's my kind of pang. But I don't then have anxiety with it. So were you actually looking at a more holistic, I need a lifestyle change and alcohol is one of my triggers?
I think in a way, yes. But also I think the anxiety was just the thing that made me think, oh, this isn't very good for me. So I quit quite like I was going to say it was selfish, but I quit drinking because I didn't like it. The person it was making me. I didn't really do it for my health. I did it for, couldn't really deal with the shame of the next day anymore, didn't like who I was becoming. But actually, since I've quit and got a bit more engaged in sobriety, I've actually learned how negative alcohol can be for your health. Mm. Whereas I didn't know that. Alcohol's bad for your health, but nobody told me. Like you guys were saying, it's the cheers.
No, they tell you in school. They tell you in school alcohol's bad.
Do they? I didn't get told in school. Yeah. We got told no drugs. Drugs are bad. Alcohol, don't do it till you're 18. And actually, I think in years to come, there'll be a lot more awareness about the negative effects of alcohol.
I'm going to defend alcohol here.
Because you like it.
No, but it's about quality. So and we've discussed this before. There's a snobbery, I think, potentially with what's good alcohol and bad alcohol. So I do not drink bad wine, and I don't want to name any brands, but there are it's just not even wine.
Babes,
we don't even know what
it is. It's like vinegar. It's just a toxin.
So if you're downing that and downing it excessively, to me there's a problem, because you're not even drinking good wine. But a good glass of wine with a glass of pasta, that
it's still alcohol.
Bad. And so now you can get sulfite free alcohol, you can get organic.
Me and Laurie doing a bit of an eye roll, aren't we?
Just justifying the booze.
You know, you can taste whether or not it was the grapes are from the mountain or it's by the sea. I mean, there's more to it than just downing alcoholic substance.
I think you're right. And I think there has been a great marketing job around alcohol, whether it's posh alcohol or drinking a bottle of cider in a bag on the street. Mm-hmm. But the harmful effects of alcohol are in all alcohol, whether it's organic, whether it's 20p tinny from Tesco. And I'm not someone that says you shouldn't drink. Mm-hmm. I just want people to know that not drinking's an option and to be as aware of the harmful effects of alcohol as we are of smoking. I don't tell people not to smoke, mm-hmm. but they know about the dangers of smoking. And there's some stats now, like a lot of research comes out and quite often it gets quashed by the media because mm-hmm. media is funded by advertising as a whole and advertising mm-hmm. alcohol is big business. So it's something like, right, I'm reading this stat because I had to look it up. But liver disease is set to overtake heart disease as the biggest cause of death by 2020. Mm-hmm. There was a study done by Public Health England that says alcohol is the leading cause of death amongst people aged between 15 and 49. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff about alcohol. In 20 years' time, alcohol will be like smoking. People will still do it, but they'll be aware of the risks. And like I'm saying, I didn't quit for any of these reasons, but now I know about it. And it's something like, I think 1 in 5 people drinks at the really risky levels, but they've since recently found even one drink actually can be damaging for your health. And I was like I'm a yoga teacher. So I was like a yoga doing, green juice drinking, spin class going, super into my health, always eating organic food, and then drinking like a posh, expensive bottle of bottle of expensive champagne.
Well, you do have a good taste.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Drinking an expensive bottle of champagne, thinking that that was fine for my health because the magazines say a glass of wine here is all right, you know, a couple of glasses here is okay. But actually to drink within the recommended units, which will keep decreasing as they actually look at the effects, it's pretty tricky.
But it's not just the health benefits, though, is it? Because I think as a society, as a culture, everything evolves around drinking. I find it the most bizarre thing that on a Friday night, you will all congregate at a location that will feed you a substance that will then make you basically behave differently, walk differently, act differently, maybe even make you unconscious. To me, that is the weirdest thing ever, but it's normal. And I don't know, can you tell us a bit about how you've got through that journey of being sober and being strong enough to go down the pub with your mates and you say you're not drinking and then all of them go, and just giving you this backlash, which I still get, and it does my head.
Who gives it to you?
My friends, because they less now. I mean, you know, I know Nat likes to drink and we'll go out and she'll drink and there isn't, but I have got friends who don't like if I'm not drinking, and there is this whole guilt trip, and it's much more about them feeling a bit unhappy that they need a drink and they probably shouldn't be drinking because they're going to do stuff the next day. But in the early days, I tried to quit drinking because of the psychological effects. It made me depressed. It made me really, really low. Just started my business. The next day I was tired. It just made everything awful. And I'm just much happier not drinking. Like, it really adds nothing to my life. But it's a hard journey and it's hard at 27. So
yeah,
how have you done that?
I think also a really difficult thing is when you stop drinking, you reflect on other people. So other people want to defend their choice. And I get that quite a lot. And I always say to people, look, I don't care what you do, but this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I found it really hard to begin with. And to begin with, it was the reason that I used to start drinking again. So I'd quit and I'd maybe quit for a month or two and then I'd go out or I'd go on a date and they'd be like, well, why aren't you drinking? How boring? Are you boring?
Dates are the worst.
Dates are awful.
You cannot tell people, like, I'll go on a date and I will drink because I know.
Will you?
Yes, because I've been, you know, connected with people before or whatever. I've been on a date, told them I don't drink, and there's a judgment. They don't know you. So they're immediately assuming that you're not fun or interesting because you're not drinking.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. It's this judgment, isn't it? Because I was just thinking about the peer pressure versus the judgment. And I was saying to the girls before, my brother doesn't, my youngest brother doesn't drink. And when he goes out on dates, I say to him, well, how? And he says, as a guy, as a single guy, you know, in his early 30s, it's so difficult going out because he finds pubs boring. He finds people that are drunk really boring. Mm. He says they just drivel on in just the most pointless conversations. I mean, he hates being around me. I'm a lovey drunk. But I say to him in a dating scenario, and he's so sick and tired of trotting out the story as to why he doesn't drink. And actually, his is a physical reason. He has a boy with it, but he has something to do with his kidneys, so he doesn't. But straight away, you go in, and there is that judgment in that one moment. You say, "I'm going to have a lemonade tonight." And he finds that.
And you make it... I was about to say, can I date him? I was joking.
Yes, you can. This is a whole new site. Actually,
Anna presents Slebs on Go Dating. Exactly. So this is the...
She's a relationship expert.
Do you know what? This is not even a joke. Yes, you can date my brother. He's really nice. Okay, I'm going to get your number. We'll sort it out. Is that unprofessional, girls?
No,
probably.
Not at all.
Probably.
I love she it. She asked first, so it's fine.
No, dating is really hard. And actually, I would say to anyone that's dating, move to Norfolk because you have to drive everywhere, right? So nobody expects you to drink a lot. And I do think the dating thing that's really difficult is if you live in a big city, because outside of a big city, I found you drive everywhere. No one expects you to have more than one drink, even if you were drinking, because it's much easier to say, actually, I'm not drinking.
There's no cabs or anything.
There's no cabs. Yeah, it costs, like, to get to my house where I live now, it costs 50 quid to get a cab home from town. Yeah. I'm not doing that.
Where do you live?
Like, I live in the middle of nowhere, in just outside of Norwich.
I thought you were about to say in the middle of nowhere, near nowhere. So this is a really interesting place.
You might have to be a bit nearer Hertfordshire for a date with
Oh, yeah.
She's got a car. It's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, no, I found that. The dating situation really difficult. And to go back to your question about going out and dealing with it, in the early days I found it really hard. I found rehearsing, this sounds a bit stupid, but rehearsing in my head going to a pub and not drinking, like, you know, athletes use visualization to imagine like winning a race. In that same way, I was visualizing going to the pub, ordering a Diet Coke, having a good time, saying no thank you to someone and then leaving, to get in my head that it was okay. And after sort of the first 6 months, took a while, I'm pretty cool with it now. And when people ask me if I don't drink, I go, oh, if people ask me what I want to drink, I'll just say, oh, Diet Coke or whatever. And they'll say, oh, you're not drinking. I'm like, no, I don't drink. They say, why? And I go, I was a mess when I was drinking. No, I'm not. Shuts people up. Right?
Yeah, where can you go? Do you get the, like, when you ask for your drink, like a lemonade or sometimes a glass of water, you sure you don't want something else? Do you want like a mocktail? Like, they feel like you're massively missing out because you're not having the cocktail or the fancy glass. I'm like, no, just what the water's fine.
Can I ask you girls that don't drink then, what are your thoughts? Because some people, there's a... I don't know if you're against this or for it, about sort of pretending that you are drinking when you're not drinking to stop any of that judgment happening. You know, what are you drinking? It's actually a sparkling water with a bit of lime in it. But, oh, it's a vodka and tonic. And sometimes, but there are certain pubs now that are really sort of starting to pop up where the barman, the bartenders or bar ladies are clued up to that. And you can kind of almost whisper to them, you know, if anyone's getting a round in, can you just make sure that mine's just a soft drink? What do you think of that? Because I think that's dreadful, that you have to just fib your way through a night.
No, I think there's time. So I was just, for me, I have to take clients out quite a lot. And for me, a lot of my clients really enjoy drinking and they want to go out and they want to have a few drinks, or we'll go out for, you know, Christmas has just happened. We go out and then they want to carry on drinking and carry on drinking. And that to me is really hard. And I have to almost fake drinking. So I'll order a drink or I'll have a drink and I might have a couple of sips, you know, because, like, you know, I'm not like totally 100% not drinking, but
it's a
will
choice.
But I'm much more like will not have it. I tell you what has been a saving grace, the seed lip drinks.
I love that stuff.
Because, what are they? What, because so, I heard, I was reading an article about it and it said this.
Yeah, so they're basically distilled like alcohol but not alcohol, so it's like a botanical mix and it works really well with tonic water. So you order it and it tastes a bit like a gin and tonic but not, and it's not alcoholic, but you're ordering something other than an orange juice. And for me, that's really changed stuff now, because I can be out with mates and go, oh, I'm gonna have a seed lip, and then there's
and tonic and it sounds like a gin and tonic or
something. And they seem to not
that doesn't go through the same sober filter.
Yeah, isn't it awful that you have to even go through that shot? Natalie's sitting there going, yeah, just drink a drink.
So I think there are a couple of things. Drinking in the UK is a ritual in a different way to it's a ritual if you're in Italy and lots of other places. And so the bit that you're talking about, the confusion people face is, well, how do we bond if you're not drinking?
That's right.
It's a British people problem.
Exactly. So it's less about the drink. It's the
social.
Well, how are we going to have a deeper meaningful, and how are we going to laugh? And move
along at the same pace. Yeah. Because as you say, you start sober and then you start getting a bit giddy and then you end up literally arms around each other. I'm generalising, but you know what I'm saying.
And
falling into a cab with a kebab.
Is more so what people then go, oh, and they don't know how to behave or respond, I think, more so than drinking. Because actually, if I said to any of my friends I wasn't drinking, they'd be like, fair enough. They say, when we go out, you usually have a water. Yeah, fair enough. So, and it's because I don't need to bond with you and be in a sloshy, messy way. But for other people where actually what they're trying to do is have that connection, they don't know what to do in that scenario.
Yeah, and I think that's changing more and more as more people actually are stopping drinking, or at least doing like extended periods of sobriety. Like I found that since I've stopped, and it was only just over 2 years ago, things are different now. More people are sober. There's more seed lip around. There's different alcohol-free alternatives. And with your mates that want to get slosh with you, the first couple of times is weird, but over time you realise that you can still connect without the alcohol. You just have to be a bit better at like letting go your like British stuff. Stiff upper lip, because we have this stiff upper lip, right? It takes us ages to relax and to be super friendly, like to hug people. I don't know, I'm quite huggy,
just
but
to talk.
Just to talk,
just to have a chat
over
someone
time,
you don't know.
You get over that, I think, as a sober person. You have to, otherwise you're never going to connect with anyone ever again. That's a big thing for me. I used alcohol for all sorts of, you know, confidence, to unwind, definitely for a date, God, but then you fancy anyone, right? If you've had like a bottle of wine. I tell you what, go on a date sober, a first date sober, and you know pretty quickly if you like them or not. Whereas I used to find, go on a first date, share a bottle of wine. Oh, everyone looks good after half a bottle of wine. Like, you've got loads of chemistry, right?
So true. Laurie, thank you so much for coming in. You've got some great tips as well that you put in here. I mean, I wish I had more time to go through them, but I'm hoping people will fly over to your blog. But some of your tips, 4 actions that help you stay alcohol-free. You've got to get quiet and meditate, go for a walk, reach out to a sober friend, and read books about sobriety. So those are some key points. Pointers from you there. I know Emma's a huge fan as well, so how can people find out more about Girl and Tonic?
Yeah, so thank you guys for so much for having me and talking about sobriety on Saturday night.
I needed moral support. Thanks for coming.
It's a dry January. I think a lot of listeners will be enjoying this.
Yeah, so my blog is girlandtonic.co.uk. It's pretty easy to find. Just replace gin with girl. And then my my Instagram is Laurie V. McAllister, but you're probably better off finding it through the blog because my name is difficult to spell.
It's the first thing that came up, actually. Great. When I started looking for you. So.
Okay, well,
so
that's
it's
good
all
news.
Done. Laurie, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your January.
Thank you very much.
Whatever
Thanks for having
do.
Me.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The Fempire strikes back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
On to a topic which I know for all three of us, and Harry, I'm sure as well, I speak for her, that says we're pretty appalled by this news story. It's certainly an interesting one. I'm delighted to welcome onto the show Beverly Turner. Now, Beverly has recently left a speech radio station, and in a series of tweets, she has exposed or stated, shall I say, that this has left just one female presenter on the station. Now, we're often hearing, aren't we, in television, we've often heard this about older ladies presenting TV or being favoured over younger presenters. It's kind of something that's been ongoing for a long time in the media. And now we seem to be turning the spotlight to radio here on this one. And Beverly has, I don't know if it's brave, is it just because this is what Beverly is all about? She's decided to be honest and open and hasn't sort of slid out the back door quietly, mm-hmm. citing I've got new projects in the pipeline, trotting out the old cliché. Very honest and said, actually, I haven't. I've given the heave ho. Let's have her explain the whole situation though herself. Beverly, welcome to Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies. I'm actually sitting here thinking, is it past bra o'clock?
Beverly, take it off, Beverly.
Take it off.
Beverly, listen to that.
Yeah, Beverly, are you wearing a bra? Because if you're not, get it off now. Come on.
Well, I am, but this is the problem. I have realised it is after bra o'clock, but I'm at my sister's house with her husband here, and I'm not sure it would be appropriate to just offer it. I have been known to do so before now, but my head is slightly spinning with all that. Thank you, ladies, for asking me to come on tonight, because I know this is something, obviously, that is important to you guys as well, about female representation in the media.
And I think
to be clear, with no longer working at that radio station, that wasn't any sort of statement based on the fact that there aren't many women there. Obviously, I would like to see there be more women there, and obviously not being there reduces the number of women. And in drawing attention to that gender discrepancy, I think all I wanted to do was state a fact. It wasn't a reason. It's not something that I'm kind of exposing, because it's there. It's on the website. Mm. And actually, there are many radio stations that are speech-based, which underrepresent women as mm-hmm. presenters, actually. And I think that's such a shame. And I think it's a shame because it lets down the listeners, to be completely honest. If you are working at a speech radio station, as you all know, we are having a conversation with the listeners. How can we represent and hold a mirror up to the listeners and let them know that we walk in their shoes if so few of us are women? Mm-hmm. Because I think it's a bit of a misconception that women don't listen to speech radio. All my female friends listen to talk radio in various guises, and specifically to talk radio, but also to other speech radio. And I think that sometimes the blokes who are running some of these stations are a little bit stuck in the dark ages, in that they look at themselves, they are default man, as Grace mm-hmm. and Perry kind of describes the white middle-class man, and they see the world in their image, and so they hire people in their image. Mm-hmm. And I think that tackling subjects as a woman, in some instances, particularly as a mum, I think that the likes of me bring a different perspective on various issues, whether that is education, whether it is the NHS, whether it is crime, whether it's technology, obesity. Women's voices are very important in those debates, because we are often holding the fort at home. We are the ones dealing with the kids and deciding what goes in the shopping trolley or in their mouths or on their screen. All these big issues that affect us actually on a day-to-day basis, more so than necessarily Brexit, let's say, or international politics. The stuff that we deal with day in, day out, hour in, hour out, women are actually at the coalface with a lot of these stories that we want to talk about. So to have so few women represented in talk media, in whatever guise that is, I think is a shame, and I just think it's a mistake. And I don't think it's necessarily about deliberate prejudice. I think a lot of it is about subconscious bias often, and not really recognising that
Beverly,
women need to be represented.
Is it subconscious, or going back to the point that you just made, actually, the people that are running the newsrooms and making the hires are thinking ultimately about them, about themselves. But also, I just want to pick up on a point that you made. It's not just about women talking and that broader representation. It's women talking to women. So when we pitched this show, we shared some stats. And at the time, it was only 4% of radio output was women talking to women. There's more output where it's women talking to men. There is a lot more output. I think it was 38% of radio output at the time was men talking to men. And so actually a group of women having a conversation about things that are important to them and also therefore the listeners, given that we are 51% of the population, is important because it's, you're just going to get a different type of conversation than if you split it and you have another man in the studio, not to say that their voices aren't important too, but that is equally as important.
But Beverly, just going back to your point, you were saying, your point earlier, you were saying that people don't think that women listen to talk radio. And I wonder if we're in this sicklier cycle that we are with also with women's sport, where the pushback is always with sport, probably with radio, is women you have... Watch. All you're showing all the men all the time, and then you wonder why you don't have any female listeners. But then there's always the challenge if you are a speech station that has 19 male presenters and one female, and then you look at your stats and you're like, wow, you know, 90% of our listeners are male. Really? You know, and then you get stuck in that thing where you're like, well, we don't want to lose listeners, but we actually, we don't want to invest the time to have the female-led shows and the female broadcasters to build that female audience because, you know, we want results. And that's the pushback you get in the sports arena as well. They're like, we don't get clicks for women's sport, but you've got to start putting the stuff out there to build the audience.
I think there's some validity with the parallel. But I would say that when it comes to women's sport, we are often told this is about sponsorship and it's about money and it's about the fact that women won't pay to watch sport, etc. If you're talking about commercial broadcasting organisations, women tend to be the purchasers. Women often possess the buying power within houses. We know that. We know that. And that is why so much advertising is focused at women, actually. That's why so much of what we watch on, you know, on the TV, the adverts, the advertisers have often got the women in mind who might be buying purchases for the house. They know that sometimes we're a soft touch when it comes to material possessions, actually in a way that blokes sometimes aren't. So I think when it comes to commercial media, it just doesn't seem to make any sort of financial sense to not talk to your women as well, because as I say, we are the people who are going to buy things that are advertised on stations. So I don't quite know what the logic is behind that, because as you say, the statistics actually don't necessarily hold that up either. I tell you what I do think is interesting in relation to speech radio, and I think one of the reasons it hasn't always necessarily appealed to women either to present on it or to listen to it is because we are not brought up to be combative. It's not necessarily in our female nature to look for a fight. And so much of speech radio is about a binary argument. And it's you know, do you think this, yes or no, blah, 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 hit the phones. And the blokes are very good at that. The blokes are very good at winding up the listeners. I like that. I have to say, I kind of like the challenge of that. I was brought up to stand up for myself. I don't mind a bit of a ruckus. And I think women can do it often with a great deal of consideration for who we're talking to. I think we're able, what my listeners would often feedback to me is, we like your show, Bev, because you listen. And what often happens in speech radio is the blokes love the sound of their own voice and they talk over each other. And it can make for great radio, but it doesn't mean that women can't necessarily do it. But it means that the women who do it need to be retained, they need to be looked after, they need to be promoted, and they need to be encouraged from the start to get involved in that medium. And then I think with, in terms of callers that you guys get on talk radio and the other local radio stations and phoning stations get, you know, women, again, won't necessarily ring up for a row. They will ring up for a conversation. And if you're handling something like Brexit, I mean, seriously, there is a whole generation of men that I do not know what they talked about before Brexit. I do not know what, I genuinely don't know what they talked about. I don't know what they talked about. And they will hit the phones and they will want to ring into whatever media outlet it is, and they will be writing letters and they want to be heard and they want people to hear their voices. And often women want to ring up to go, well, I think this, Bev, but what do you think? And maybe it's this and maybe it's that. We have a different style of communication, which doesn't necessarily, I think, lend itself to the fighting media that we're getting used to hearing in this country. But I don't think that's necessarily what men or women want to continuously listen to. Mm. Because if you look at actually some of the most successful radio stations throughout the years, forgive me, ladies, but the original Woman's Hour, mm-hmm. I have no doubt that you will have such longevity and, you know, as they have had. Like, one of the most, arguably, the most successful radio show of all time, yes, is Radio 4's Woman's Hour. Now, so don't tell me that women don't listen to women on the radio, because that has stood the test of time, and that is its raison d'etre. I know lots of blokes who listen to Woman's Hour on Radio 4, by the way. And I'd like to think that there will be lots of men who also listen to your radio show. So I think that it is wrong to presume that we can be neglected either on air or as listeners, because we are here, we are keen, we want to think, we want to talk, we want to buy stuff. And that's where I think the media outlets get it wrong, if they're not representing women in the right way. So it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make financial sense.
No, it doesn't at all. But I also think, going back to your point around Women's Hour, and there's no need to apologise at all, it is an amazing show.
Yeah, incredible. It's
completely an institution that has done things in a way that suits that medium. And I buy your point that speech radio is about the battle. It is about a binary position, but it doesn't have to be. And actually, we don't do that. I don't like fighting with people on a Saturday night. It's a Saturday night. Actually, I want to have a good conversation. I want to know what makes someone tick. I want to understand why someone has decided to quit their job and move to a camp in Syria and help 3,000 women overcome their hurdles and their challenges, and why they're challenging everyone to think about doing something as committed and devoted through a book. That's what's interesting to me. And so I think part of what we need to do as female broadcasters is challenge what the norm is, because we know that we have the financial buying power. We know that money can, you know, go behind our shows, because we have the purchasing power. But maybe if we push to do things differently, and actually it's not about competition, it is just about saying, look, if you don't get it now, you'll have to get it at some point, because things are changing.
And also, we know what people want, and it's really good to hear you, Beverly, as another broadcaster, saying that, you know, you don't always want to hear that challenging black and white conversation, because the three of us have said that so many times, you know, and you've only got to look at...
I think speech radio, I mean, I'm just a massive radio geek anyway. I just couldn't live without radio. And I think speech radio does sometimes fly when people feel strongly about their position. If you are the presenter and you have a caller, or you have two people in the studio, when you feel strongly and those passions are on, that's when you stop in the kitchen what you're doing and you turn the volume up. So there is some merit to say that we need some of that. Yes. But I don't think we need 24/7 of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we really don't. And I think that... Where women often do well, I think, in broadcasting, as I said, it's about the listening. And sometimes it's we're dealing in stereotypes, let's face it, in this conversation. But what we often are interested in is the person. We're interested in the human element of any particular story. So, you know, if I was ever talking to a caller about something and they had a very strong position on whether it was capital punishment or immigration or whatever it is, and then you say to them, if you don't mind me asking, what's your story? Mm-hmm. Why do you feel like this? That is when, for me, you get the gold. Because suddenly they drop their fighty guard and they will say, well, you know, we've got immigrants who moved in next door and it's made my life difficult, or whatever it is, even if it's a prejudice, if you can just scratch the surface of that motivation and the mask drops, and that is where radio is beautiful, and that is when it sings, is when you get to hear the human stories, exactly like you were saying about women working in Syria. It's about finding out the heart of the person's story, because all we do really on radio is tell stories. And there is no more beautiful thing than a great conversation and hearing a story. It's for me, that's the joy of life, is communication like that. And so if you can do that well, and I think women do that really well.
Well, we have a plethora of women here, obviously, at Talk Radio. We've got Julia Hartley-Smith on breakfast in the weekday.
On a breakfast show.
Yeah,
so on a breakfast. Julia Hartley-Brewer on the breakfast show is, and that you mustn't underestimate the significance of that, because within speech radio, the breakfast show, mm-hmm. within whatever channel it is, across the country, in fact, across the world, the breakfast show being the blue ribboned event, effectively. Mm. If we're making comparison with sport, that's the men's 100 metres. That's the Usain Bolt event.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And actually, it's incredibly brave of Talk Radio to put a woman in that position, because that's almost unprecedented mm-hmm. in speech radio. That is really quite an amazing step. You know, I'm trying to think whether any particular Talk Radio shows that have had women presenting Drive Time, which is maybe the second most prestigious show that you could do on radio.
And Penny Smith has done Drive.
Sort of Syra Khan, Daisy McAndrew. We've got in doing Mid Mornings tomorrow as well. Obviously,
Yasmina,
Badass Women's Hour.
Yeah, as well.
Plenty of women. Mm. There can always be more, though.
Right? There can always be more.
And they should. And I don't think that women should be on radio necessarily just because they are a woman.
Exactly.
I remember having a conversation with one of my former bosses about something, a position that I wanted. And I said, he said, but you shouldn't get it because you're a woman. I was like, no, it's because I'm good enough. Yeah. That's why I should have it. I'm just as good as him. I'm not sitting here saying, give it me because I'm a woman. I'm saying, give it me because I'm just as good.
Yeah.
And if you don't think so, tell me why. Yeah. And I can take that too. But, I just think that we are good communicators. So we should really have those positions in order to make those skills, put those skills to good use.
Absolutely.
Why not?
And it should be. And you know, what is next then, Beverly? I mean, your series of tweets were really fantastic, really honest, really open.
Thank you.
Full of emotion, but full of clarity and fact. And you can absolutely see, just to clarify, there was no mudslinging there at all. It was just putting it out there. There it is. There's my position. And it was, can I say, as well as a broadcaster, it was so refreshing to hear that you just kind of completely...
Thank you.
Completely knocked it out the park with none of the flannel, none of the waffle, none of the classic, in inverted commas, all pipeline. I've got lots of things in the pipeline. Because you know what?
I think that's what you learn, though. Over the years, I've learned as a presenter on telly and on radio, just be honest.
Just be honest.
Because listeners are not stupid.
No.
And they know if we're... Can we swear at this time of the night? I won't.
They know if
we're dealing in BS, they know it.
Yeah.
And so if you've got nothing to hide and nothing to fear, you can be honest. And I just said, look, I'm not going to tell you I've got exciting projects on the
That's
horizon.
The one.
I don't. I have a blank sheet of paper. I have a the start of the new year, and I'm both terrified and really excited about it in the same breath. And I'm currently on jury service at the moment.
Oh, wow.
So that's kind of
That was very timely.
Also, I would normally be on the radio, ladies, now. So if I was still doing what I was doing, I wouldn't
be
here
to talk
talking to,
us.
To you. So frankly, everything works out. Still wearing my bra.
Well, get that off now. I mean, their loss is certainly our gain. And I'd say it's absolutely wonderful, because you say we're all peers in the same industry, and it's so nice to just hear someone be honest, as I would like to think I would be too. I'm sure the girls that, you know what, none of all the old guff and flannel, you know, this is it. This is the industry. It's a cutthroat industry at times, you know. It makes and breaks you every flipping week, but somehow we pick ourselves back up, and the thrill and the passion for what we do for our living takes us through. And Beverly, I can't wait to see where you turn up next. I really can't.
Thank you. Caught on Monday morning.
She's on jury service, Pete. Just to make it clear. Exactly. Well, get that bra off, missus, and enjoy the rest of your Saturday night. Thanks for joining us tonight on Talk Radio. The fabulous Beverly there, Beverly Turner. Oh, isn't she a legend?
Yeah. It's great. Great to chat to her. Yeah. And great just to have a perspective from another broadcaster.
It really is, actually. It really is. Say, we should have popped her in here. It's refreshing because I think particularly within this industry as women, I do feel there is that extra layer of sometimes having to carry that armour a little bit more, because we are the underdogs often. And hearing her perspective from that, I mean, she's just gone up in my estimation more.
There were two things that struck me as she was talking. The first one is that we keep saying that men's bias is unconscious, and it's not unconscious. It's not unconscious. We need to get over this. It's not unconscious. They know what they're doing. They don't think that we sell. So the first thing we need to do is challenge that. And I think aligned to that, it's this thing around competition. So it actually hurt my heart when she said forgive me, and she mentioned Women's Hour.
I know.
Like, whoa. Yeah, this isn't a pie.
No,
it's not like, oh my goodness, we can't.
It's just, more the merrier.
Exactly.
And as you say, what an incredible institution.
We're totally obviously inspired by that show.
It completely is inspiration. We've said it on stage with them in the room. This is, if anything, a love song to brilliant women talking about amazing things. So,
What do you think about her point there, where she said, "I don't think I should be there just because I'm a woman. I should be there on merit." Because I really struggle with that, because there's a bit of me going, "Well, you know, if it's skewed and there's only 4% of women on the radio, we need to put them there. Yes, you need to be a broadcaster, but." Ultimately, you do need to be there because you are a woman, because we need some diversity in voices and perspectives.
If you want to pull in a larger female audience or just change the conversation.
Yeah. So I think it's that chicken and egg thing, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely, for example, Beverly's there on absolute merit. I hope we're all here tonight on absolute merit as well. But there is an absolute argument of saying, but women get the best women, which I believe we are certainly tonight for this show, and that's it. And as you say, it is a fine line between, you know, just because you're a woman. But I'm interested to see where Beverly got.
We didn't pitch a blanket Saturday night show. We pitched a show for women.
Yeah.
So we have to be women in order to do this show. And it wouldn't work otherwise. It wouldn't work otherwise.
Exactly.
And so it's not a tokenistic, we're going to let them on because they're women.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant show because it's three women talking about things that matter to us, which matter therefore to 51% of the population.
Yeah. And it is literally that spotlight.
Yeah.
It's celebrated.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous. 1, 2, 3, 4!
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.